Om Agyanati Milandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Samhilatan Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sa Pandantikam. I'd like to speak first about a pastime of Krishna's that everyone is quite familiar with, but it's an exciting pastime. And then it will link to a part of the pastime which is the main topic of our discussion, Uddhava's visit to Vrindavan, because Uddhava is going to come in contact with a level of Krishna consciousness that is unlimitedly deep and unlimitedly powerful. It's either a geyser, which means a hot water explosion from deep within the earth, or a volcano, but it's powerful and it's hot. And it's all-consuming. But before we get to that, I would like to speak a little of a pastime that Nanda Maharaj will remember, but it's not one that it is thought favorably of in Vrindavan, and that is Krishna's entrance, or past Krishna's entrance into Mathura, and then finally the killing of Kamsa. Akur, of course, takes Krishna from Braja, and the residents of Vrindavan are brokenhearted. To say that they're brokenhearted makes it sound superficial. What are the words to describe the pain of separation, of having Krishna directly in front of you continuously, year after year, month after month, day after day, and then suddenly he's gone? The center of your life, the one who you've been thinking of, pleasing for every minute of those days and months and years. Just no other thought other than the attractive, being caught by the attractive sweetness of Krishna, his pastimes, his names. The residents of Vrindavan would continuously chant Krishna's names. They would sing always of what he was doing. The cowherd boys, when they would come in from being with Krishna during the day, they would make Krishna's deeds into poems and songs, and they would be singing them as they would dance into Vrindavan, and Mother Yashoda would be singing about Krishna. Everyone would be singing about Krishna. Unabashedly. Where he's gone. I mean, he's unashamed, practically speaking. They would just sing about Krishna. But then Krishna left, and suddenly it was like the sun had set and darkness had settled throughout Braja. But what was most unfortunate for the residents of Vrindavan was the rising sun of fortune for the residents of Mathura and the gopis in Srimati Radharani. They were speaking like this when Krishna was mounting the chariot and Akur was driving him away. The gopis were saying, "This dark night of misfortune that is setting for us is the greatest fortune for the ladies of Mathura, because they are going to be able to see the smiling face of Krishna, and they're going to catch or be at the other end of his glance, the smile of his glance out of the corner of his eye." So then Krishna entered Mathura. He told Akura wanted to bring him to his home. And Krishna very sweetly said, "Yes, yes, yes," meaning no, 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 or meaning later, later. "Yes, I will come, but after performing the function that I've actually come for, and that is the killing of Kamsa. So right in the very, soon as Krishna arrived in Mathura, he said what he was going to do. I'm going to kill Kamsa. Kamsa had imprisoned his parents for so many years, had killed so many of his brothers. And he was a ferocious rakshasa. He had sent all the yadus out of fear. They had run and were hiding throughout the nearby towns and villages. He had stopped the sacrifices. I have heard actually that he was eating Brahmins. That's pretty, that's what rakshasas do. I also heard that Aurangzeb, he would very much like to eat his noon meal cooked on the fires of the Brahmin threads of those Brahmins he had killed that day. Quite extreme. These type of people actually exist and have existed. They're rakshasas. Prabhupada actually said this. They're rakshasas. They're not humans. So Kamsa was like that. And Krishna had come. Yada yada hidamasya ganir bhavati bharati. He had come to kill him, practically speaking. And at that very moment when Krishna was there in Mathura, his parents were imprisoned by Kamsa. So Krishna came in on one level with such a heavy mission. On another level, he came in a very light and laughing spirit. And he and the boys decided to tour Mathura and see the sights, because they were just boys from the village and they had come for the first time to the big city. So first they saw a washerman who was quite demonic by nature. And Krishna poked him. And sometimes people are peaceful, but when they get poked, their real nature comes out. And the washerman was like that. And he came out with speaking such nasty words about Krishna and Balaram. He called them Balesha. He called, in the dual case, he called you, meaning Krishna and Balaram, fools. And Krishna immediately cut off his head. Immediately. And then all the clothes that he was protecting for his master, Kamsa, they were just left there as all his assistant Dobiwalas. They ran with their donkeys. They ran, and Krishna took the clothes that he wanted. Balaram took the clothes. The boys took the clothes that they wanted, and everything else was just left there in the street. And this was in front of thousands of people who had gathered to see beautiful Krishna. Because they had heard about Krishna. Everyone had heard about Krishna, even in Mathura, because everyone in Vrindavan was talking about Krishna continuously. His beauty, his deeds. So the names of Krishna were always being sounded, and the Mathura Vasis had heard about Krishna, and they had come to see him. They came onto the street, they were making... And this was in the presence of Kamsa, who they were terrified of. So he killed the washerman, then he went to the home of he passed the house of a weaver or a tailor, and he had the clothes suited properly, and he matched the colors so they looked no longer village clothes. It's interesting, Jiva Goswami said that when the washerman saw Krishna, and he said, these clothes are meant for the king, not for boys who are used to wandering in the forests and the mountains. But actually, the clothes that Krishna were given, they were given by the demigods. Varuna had given Krishna cloth, and even Kaliya had given Krishna cloth and jewels. So the washerman, blinded by his envy and his animosity, he could not see who Krishna was. He couldn't even see what Krishna was wearing, because we cannot see the good of others when our hearts are filled with animosity and envy, yes. Exactly. because everything gets covered. We're only seeing our own unhappy minds in that state, unsatisfied minds. So Krishna had gone to the weaver who was actually had heard about Krishna previously, and Krishna decided to benedict him. But this weaver had been frightened of Kamsa, so he never went to Vrindavan, because sometimes we think, why didn't the residents of Vrindavan come to Mathura to see Krishna? But also, why, after hearing about Krishna, why didn't the residents of Mathura come to Vrindavan to actually see him? Because they were continuously hearing about this all-attractive person who was so beautiful, so beautiful. How can we describe unlimitedly beautiful? What does that, how can we conceive of unlimitedly beautiful? Everything about him, his sapphire-like effulgence, his beautiful dhoti, the red cloth that he had hooked his thumb over as he was playing his flute. Just everything is so delicate and well done as suitable for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the all-attractive person. So and Krishna benedicted the weaver in such a way. Again, Srila Jiva Goswami describes that he gave him Sarupya Mukti. He gave him and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that he gave him the form, he benedicted him with the form of a cowherd boy, just like him, because he had heard about Krishna's cowherd boy activities, and yad-yad-diyat-tar-ura-gaya-vibhavayanti-tam-tam-pranayeshe-saranugraha, that desire had entered his heart to be with Krishna. But the really interesting thing is that he gave him that form, says Jiva Goswami, right as everyone was watching. Krishna's shakti of beauty entered his body, and he became beautiful with a cowherd boy form similar to Krishna's. Krishna can do as he likes. And then Krishna, after leaving the weaver, he went to the home of someone named Sudama. And Sudama was a mali. He made flower garlands. And Sudama, somewhat different from the weaver, he had gone to Vrindavan to find very rare, the beautiful flowers that were only available in Vrindavan. And there in Vrindavan, he saw Krishna performing his cowherd boy pastimes. And he became so attracted. So he would use that as an excuse that I'm looking for flowers, to always go to Vrindavan, because sometimes one needs a good excuse. And there he developed, because his name was Sudama, and Krishna's very dear friend was also named Sudama. Of course, that was later, but they had the same name. And even when someone has the same name as your friend, that immediately just builds some type of an attachment. So they became friends. And then while Krishna was walking through Mathura, Sudama was in his house. And Sudama was thinking, I want to see Krishna, but I can't go empty-handed. That's the principle when we go to a temple. We don't go empty-handed. We go carrying something to offer. And in the very, very early days of the movement, he put some rice outside the temple. Were you in Los Angeles when he did that? Outside the temple door. So that the devotees, when they entered the temple, at least they could pick up some rice and be able to offer it to the deities when they entered. Because the principle is, one doesn't go empty-handed. One gives. One goes in a giving mood. And as we saw with Sudama and everyone that Krishna contacted, they gave to Krishna, except for the washerman who refused to give to Krishna. But when one gives to Krishna, and one gets much more than one gives. So in any case, so Sudama, the Mali, he didn't go outside, but he was inside his house making a garland of the softest, most beautiful flowers for Krishna. Softest, beautiful, most fragrant flowers. And it wasn't quite finished. But as Krishna was walking through the city, he thought, this must be where my friend Sudama lives. And he asked the people, is this where the garland maker? And yes, yes, Sudama. And he went into the house, and Sudama was overcome with, of course, the greatest happiness. And he gave Krishna and Balaram those garlands, and he gave the cowherd boys garlands, but he gave Krishna that special garland because he was his friend. And Krishna, as we spoke about earlier, he gave the garland maker what the garland maker desired, but he gave him everything else as well, in this life and next life. And then Krishna went further, and he asked, because Kamsa, in his diplomacy, when he called Krishna to come to Mathura, he kept his real motive hidden, crooked. He kept what was really in his heart hidden. He wanted to kill Krishna. That's what was in his heart. And he kept that hidden, and he wanted to attract Krishna to come. So he said to Akura, that you tell him that we're having a Dhanurjagya, we're having a great sacrifice, and there'll be a wrestling match, and we want everyone to attend so Krishna can also come, he can participate. But his plan was to kill him. But yet, there was this great, great bow that was the bow, the Dhanur of Lord Shiva, that was, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, 270 feet long, which that's in meters, that's a little teeny bit. Yes, yes, 90, so it was big, and it took 300 people, 300 strong men to carry it. And Krishna, the sweet boy who by now was decorated by Kubja, with so many beautiful pastes and fragrances on his body. He was dressed with his turban and his flamboyant, beautiful, multicolored clothing, with a beautiful, most beautiful flower garland around his neck. And he was wearing the weaver had made out of that cloth soft ornaments for Krishna's arms, because it was known that Krishna was going to wrestle. So if you're wearing hard ornaments, like bangles of gold and silver, you can't wrestle. It will hurt your body. Your tender body will become hurt. So he made ornaments out of soft cloth. So Krishna, dressed in this wonderful way, without the slightest bit of anxiety, despite him being in the enemy's kingdom, beautiful Krishna walked into the arena where the bow was kept and guarded. And the guards, of course, said, you cannot enter. And Krishna, of course, just entered. And he picked up the bow. One of our acharyas said, the verse says that he broke it. Sri Jiva or Vishwanath says, with his left hand. After all, he could hold up Giriraj with his left hand, breaking this huge bow, was nothing. And that sound reverberated, the cracking sound of the bow reverberated through the city of Mathura. And Kamsa heard it. His heart shattered. It told him, Krishna's message, release my parents. You are worthless. And Kamsa became terrified. He called his messengers. What was that sound? What can we say, King? Who broke the bow? One boy was dark, blackish complexion. The other was whitish complexion. What happened to the stand made of earth, the stage made of earth that the bow was on? Did they break that too? What can we say, King Maharaj? Was it difficult for him to string and break? What can we say, Maharaj? Because kings sometimes have a habit of killing the messengers who bring them bad news. And then Krishna, then he sent a platoon of soldiers to attack Krishna. And Balaram picked up half of the broken bow, and Krishna picked up the other half. And like child play, they killed those soldiers who rushed to Krishna. Kill him, kill him, kill him. What happened to the platoon of soldiers we sent, O messenger? What can we say, O king? And then Krishna, in Kamsa's city, just strolled outside, wandered around, accepted the praise and offerings of everyone, and then just went back to where Nanda Maharaj's wagons were situated outside in the gardens of Mathura, outside of Mathura, in the gardens. And Srila Jiva Goswami describes how usually after killing people and so many people, to purify oneself, one should take a bath. But Krishna just washed his feet. So that's what the verse says. He had his servant, one of the servants, wash his feet. And then he took some of the rice soaked in the special milk that Mother Yashoda had sent him. And he and Balaram ate that with all the cowherd boys. And they were just laughing and joking. And perhaps they took rest just like cowherd boys do underneath the wagons, just peacefully. And they slept so nicely the entire night. And Kamsa was terrified and couldn't sleep all night long, seeing horrible images that frightened him to the core of his heart. And Nanda Maharaj, he also couldn't sleep that night. He was just thinking, oh, why did I bring my restless son here? He is so delicate. He's broken the bow, and Kamsa's going to be upset with him. What will he do? We should leave now. Why did I bring him here? Why did we bring him here to the encampment of the enemy? So two different kinds of sleeplessness. One in transcendental ecstasy and one in quite mundane terror. Fearful of himself. See the difference. Nanda Maharaj's anxiety was on behalf of Krishna. Oh, my boy, he will get himself into trouble. What will this cruel King Kamsa do? What won't cruel King Kamsa do? And Kamsa just, oh, everything just to protect me, just to protect me. The next morning, Nanda Maharaj and all the cowherd men went to the sacrifice that was starting, and Kamsa was sitting on his big dais, big stage, just waiting to have Krishna killed. And Krishna and the boys, they just went down to the Yamuna, ignoring the fact that they were to be present during the wrestling match, not caring for the authority of Kamsa. And then, but when they heard the drums sounding, the marching drums that was building up the excitement for the wrestling match, then Krishna and Balaram said, "Let's go to the wrestling match." So they and the boys went. But when they got there, there was a huge, powerful elephant named blocking the way, and he was demonic. And the mahout, the driver of the control of the elephant, had the ankush, the pointed metal. He was poking him and poking him to get him angrier and angrier so he would kill Krishna. So he placed, Kamsa had this elephant and mahout placed just in front of the gate into the wrestling arena, so that no one could enter. Krishna could not enter without passing through by this elephant. And when Krishna came, he said, "Move out of the way." And the mahout became angrier. And he said, "Or else I will send you to the kingdom of death." And then Krishna, as we well know, he killed him. Of course, he killed him in a wonderful way. But I would like to describe just one or two sentences that Srila Jiva Goswami places in his description of the fight between the elephant and Krishna, that describe just the way Krishna does things. But he describes what the elephant was thinking, what it was like looking at Krishna as the fight was going on. Now that's a unique point of view. But the elephant was thinking, he moves like a dancer, but kills like a lion. Because Krishna was moving with the utmost grace. Even in the midst of the fight, before the fight, he tightened his cloth. He tucked his hair underneath his turban so it wouldn't fall on his, over his eyes. He tied his belt around him, again, to make the cloth tighter. Because sometimes, like when you get your dhoti caught on the doorknob or something like that, or your desk when you're walking. So in a fight, you have to be so careful. But Krishna did everything with the most graceful movements. Everything that Krishna does is attractive. With his effulgence, with his smile, with his delicate, soft limbs, but moving like a dancer, delicately, but with the power, the killing power of a lion and a thunderbolt. And then finally, Krishna fell to the ground after throwing the elephant by his tail for some distance, which is obviously extraordinary in and of itself, but to infuriate the elephant. The elephant, Krishna got on the ground, and the elephant, with his tusk, tried to stab him, and Krishna rolled out of the way. And the elephant's tusk got stuck in the ground. And Krishna, like a lion, lions, when they attack an elephant, it is very, very heavy. Using their claws, because the elephant is so huge and the lion is nowhere near the size of the elephant, so the lion must get behind the elephant. And then using the claws, they have to climb on top of the elephant. And when the lion is on the elephant's back, the elephant is helpless. And then, using his razor-like teeth, he bites into the tender spot behind the elephant's neck and kills him. Because the elephant's skin is thick, so thick, impenetrably thick. So Krishna, when the elephant had put his tusk in the ground and Krishna had rolled, Krishna jumped up. He uprooted a tusk. He pulled the tusk
from his body and then climbed up on the elephant's back and killed him.
And then Sri Jiva says, when the dog is killed, the fleas are automatically killed. And that flea was the Mahout. Krishna uprooted the other tusk, and he had blood sprinkled upon him, and the mudda, I've never seen what mudda is, but it's some red fluid that seems to flow from the elephant when he is during the mating season. And that had come upon him, and there he was with his cloth tied, ready for battle, sprinkled in blood, his perspiration, with the tusk on his shoulder, and Balaram with the other tusk and similarly decorated on his shoulder. They walked through the door of the wrestling arena, which had stands where all the citizens of Mathura and the kings that were subordinate to Kamsa were sitting, and Krishna and Balaram walked in, looking incredibly delicate and moving gracefully as dancers. And the people, and this is in front of Kamsa, he appeared to them differently according to who they were, Asovaisa. He appeared to them according to their own consciousness, Atmavan Manyate Jagat. He appeared to them according to their own consciousness. And some saw him as the most beautiful of boys. Some saw him as their family member. Some saw him as death personified. The rest saw him as light, like a lightning bolt, a thunderbolt. And everyone, they were glorifying Krishna in front of Kamsa. And Krishna and Balaram, with their graceful movements carrying the tusks, walked right in front of Kamsa's dais. And he had never seen them before. He asked, who are these two boys, to his attendants? They are the ones, King. Krishna and Balaram each took the tusk, their own tusk they were carrying, and rammed it right into the earth in front of the dais. And then they turned their back on Kamsa. He said, who is this Kamsa anyway? Who is this Kamsa? Who is this Kamsa? Who is this Kamsa? What heroes? Who else could be heroes like Krishna and Balaram? Who else can steal the hearts of everyone like Krishna and Balaram? Then the wrestlers stepped forward and the drums were playing. The wrestlers stepped forward, Chanura, Mastika, Krishna and Balaram, and there was an exchange, a discussion, an exchange with each other. It's very, 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 Krishna is so clever in his exchange. Chanura starts to say things, and Krishna is so clever. He says, Chanura says to Krishna, you should make the king happy by wrestling. The wrestlers are huge. And Krishna is this delicate boy dressed in this fancy way. He says, you should please the king by wrestling with us. And Krishna says, the king will be pleased, but you will lament. We don't know wrestling. We have heard you wrestle in the forest. That's just with our friends. But you are powerful wrestlers. Do not try to hide yourself with false humility. You have killed the elephant. You have killed Dhanukasura.
Dhanukasura. He had fleas. And we just touched him and he was sick already and he fell over. The elephant, he rammed his tusks in the ground, and then when I walked over to him, he fell over dead, and people thought that I killed him. And that bow, it had termites, white ants. I just touched it and it fell apart. And then, of course, Krishna killed Tanura, and Mastika was killed by Balaram. And then the other wrestlers came, Salatosa, the Krishna killed them, and everyone else ran. Because the whole event was supposed to be a wrestling match. So then when the wrestling match was over, that Krishna had won and Balaram had won, the band started playing and everyone was cheering. Because these two delicate boys who they thought, the people thought, what kind of, just to see this is contaminating to our heart. This fight between the strong and the weak, so contaminating. But then, when good triumphed over evil, the band started playing. And it was playing these joyous melodies. And then the coward boys came down from the stands and were congratulating and hugging Krishna and Balaram. And then they started playing and dancing around because they were all wearing those fancy clothes. And they were playing and dancing around. And they started wrestling, getting into the mood. And sometimes the coward boys were throwing Krishna down. Sometimes they were throwing Balaram down. And they were defeating Krishna and Balaram. And Kamsa is watching this. Now, this Krishna's Leela, his pastimes are so captivating. And they have so many. And there is Krishna in the center of it with his name, his form, his qualities, and then his leela, his pastimes. And then Kamsa finally, the band plays and they play around for 30 minutes and Kamsa can no longer tolerate it. So he considers that wealth and life are the same because he's a materialist. So that's how he thinks. Wealth and life are the same. So he stands up and says, stop this playing of the bands. Stop it immediately. Stop the music. This cheater, Nanda Maharaj, take all his wealth. Soldiers, take his wealth. Life. Put them in prison. Drive them out of town. Vasudev, kill him. Ugrasena, my father, kill him. And then Krishna became angry. He jumped up on the dais and he grabbed Kamsa by the hair. And Sri Jiva says, with that touch of Krishna's hand upon his hair, half of his life was taken from him. And then the remainder is described in different ways by different acharyas. Krishna threw him from the dais. Prabhupada in the Krishna books, Prabhupada says he pounded him with his fist, he killed him. And Kamsa was a huge, powerful, mystic, Rakshasa. And when Krishna killed him, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, he threw him from the dais, and then he assumed the weight of the universe. And Krishna himself jumped from the dais and landed on Kamsa
and killed him in that way. Krishna landed on Kapsa because he didn't want to land on the hard earth. He does everything in such a captivating way. And then there was not a sound in the wrestling arena. Kamsa was dead. But his eyes, of course, he was dead. His eyes were not blinking. But the people were thinking, actually, I heard one example by His Holiness Radha Govinda Maharaj on this. He said, there was once a village in which the qazi, the ruler of the village, his dog had died. And he called for a funeral. And everyone in the village went to the funeral. And then sometime after that, the qazi died. And no one went to the funeral. So when Kamsa died, everyone was so afraid. And his eyes weren't blinking, but because his eyes had stopped blinking a long time ago out of fear of Krishna, they weren't sure he was dead. So Krishna then dragged him around the wrestling arena to show everyone that in fact Kamsa was now dead. Balo Giriraj Maharaj ki, Balo Giriraj Darod ki, Balo Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jai Jai Shri Radhe, Jai Jai Shri Radhe, Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Sham had done it. Now, we will go back to the part where our pastime begins. Uddhav had entered beautiful Vrindavan. And in beautiful Vrindavan, Krishna had shown him what Vrindavan was like in his presence, not the devastation that it was when Krishna left Vrindavan for Mathura. And then, this is text 14, if you have that sheet with you. As soon as Uddhava arrived at Nanda Maharaj's home, Nanda came forward to meet him. The cowherd king embraced him in great happiness because Uddhava looked just like Krishna, and he was wearing the prasadam clothes of Krishna, even the dhoti, the cloth. So Nanda Maharaj immediately was remembering Krishna. It was almost as if Krishna had returned. And the depths of his internal mood of separation from Krishna, where he could not talk because the Vrindavan was now in the mood of separation again. So Nanda Maharaj was depressed, not talking, not thinking, not coming out. But when he saw Uddhava, that his chariot had arrived, Sriman Uddhava, his chariot was effulgent, Uddhava was effulgent. So he pulled himself out and he gained the strength from his bliss to be able to greet Uddhava. He was able to act externally, where he wasn't able to act externally before. Remember that Vrindavan was thrown into an ocean of separation from Krishna. The life had left Vrindavan. And Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, Sridham, Sudham, Subal, Srimati Radharani and all the gopis were like bodies with no life, just somehow going on. So Nanda Maharaj, in his bliss of seeing Uddhava, who so much reminded him of Krishna, was able to come to external consciousness to greet him. So he embraced, the king embraced in great happiness Uddhava and worshipped him as none different from Lord Vasudev. Now at this time, Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan just after he returned from the Gurukula. So that means between 60 and 70 days after Krishna had left Vrindavan, since his lotus feet had left Vrindavan. So Uddhava, after Uddhava had eaten first-class food, been seated comfortably on a bed, and had been relieved of his fatigue by a foot massage and other means, Nanda inquired from him as follows. He began to ask him questions. Now, Nanda Maharaj himself didn't massage Uddhava's feet, and Nanda Maharaj hadn't eaten since Krishna left, except for now and then the local Brahmins and the local people would sometimes bring Nanda and Yashoda food, because Yashoda Maya wouldn't cook. And there were no bands playing at all in their joyous sounds. So when Uddhava was standing before Nanda Maharaj, Nanda Maharaj said, "My dear most fortunate one, does the son of Sura, that means Vasudev, does he fare well now that he is free and has rejoined his children and other relatives?" Because Nanda Maharaj could not ask directly about Krishna. What he wanted to know was, how is Krishna, what is Krishna doing? And what he really wanted to know is, when is Krishna returning? But he couldn't directly ask this, because if he thought of Krishna, and when is he returning, he'd be thinking, Krishna is not here. And his eyes would fill with tears, and his voice would choke up, and he could not speak a word to Uddhava. So he asked about Vasudev. Vasudev is so fortunate because he is reunited with his family. He's reunited with Balaram, and he's been released from his prison. He's rejoined his children. He has rejoined his other relatives. But we are not fortunate like Vasudev, because Krishna is not here. What can we say about what it must feel like from Nanda Maharaj's position and Yashoda's position? If one lost everything that one can think of, something that you lost valuable, that was valuable to you, and that thing, whether it was a little money or a computer or your passport or your this or a family member that has passed away, a beloved, there is an emptiness of the heart. And there is what is called the smasana vairagya. When one goes to the crematorium, when one's beloved is being burnt, one thinks, what is the value of this life, of what I possess? It has no value. But after time, we project again the capacity to enjoy these things, and we again get on with our lives. So take that empty feeling of loss and multiply it by not 10 or 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 or 1,000,000,000. We can't conceive of what the emotions of Nanda Maharaj, how can we conceive of this? For them, Krishna was their life. It was everything. Because he's so attractive and he had such a charm, he was everything for them. Then, when will we have such fortune? Fortunately, Nanda Maharaj continues in text 17, because of his own sins, the sinful Kamsa has been killed along with his brothers. Nanda Maharaj had witnessed this. He always hated the saintly and righteous Yadus. But then he begins to ask about Krishna. Does Krishna remember us? He hasn't contacted us in 60, 70 days. He's so busy. The Yadus, the Vrishnis, he has to protect them. They haven't seen him in so long. They fear for the friends and supporters of Kamsa's wives. They fear for Jarasandha, the father of Kamsa's wives, and his attacks. And he's busy with the relatives, the family gatherings, the weddings. If you're from Bombay, there is one wedding after another wedding after another wedding and another wedding and another wedding and another wedding and another wedding continuously. Does he remember us? So his heart is completely broken. Does he remember his mother and his friends and his well-wishers? Because Vrindavan is empty now. Does he remember the cowherds and their village of Braja, of which he is the master? Does he remember the cows? Does he remember the Vrindavan forest? And does he remember Giriraj? Does he remember Govardhan Hill? Srila Jiva Goswami says that Nanda points to Yashodama. Look at her condition. There are so many in Vrindavan who are dying because of the lack of Krishna's association. But Yashodama is right in front of him. And he points to Yashoda. Just see the condition of Krishna's mother. And just see Braja now. Completely different from the Braja that Uddhava saw when he walked into Braja or rode on the chariot into Braja. There are no leaves on the trees. There are no birds singing. There are no cowbells. There are no flowers. There are no smiling places. No one is calling, bring this here, bring that there. It is like everyone has died. Just see the condition of Braja, bereft of his glory. And in this deep separation from Krishna, and we will hear about this in a few moments, they are actually experiencing Krishna's presence through Varaha Bhav. Let me just read a little of the comment of Vishwanath on this. Nanda Maharaj had just asked about Vasudev. But then, not able to control himself for long, Nanda then asked directly what he wanted to ask. Does Krishna, who attracts all hearts, who is my son, does he remember us? Did he not forget us? Does he remember other cowherd relatives like maternal uncles, his companions like Sridham? The cowherds in general and the gopis in Braja, whose master is Krishna. By being the master of Braja, he is naturally the master of everyone. Does he constantly remember Vrindavan, where he enjoyed so many of his pastimes? Does he remember the cows, though he has given them up? In Vrindavan, does he remember the mountain that he held in his hand for 7 days while encouraging worship of himself? After killing Kamsa, he must not be able to think about himself. Because of worrying about a safe place for the Yadus and bringing the Yadus back to Mathura from here and there, in order to defend them from many wicked enemies, such as the followers of Kamsa's wives and the father of Kamsa's wives. In that condition, how could he even think about us? Then Nanda says, Apyasyati Govinda Sarjanam Sakrit Ikshitam Tarhi drakshamatad vaktram sunashamsu samekshana. Apyasyati Govinda. Will Govinda come back? Sajanam sakrit chitam. Sakrit, just one time, not even just stay here again. But so one time ikshitam, so we can see Sajanam, his relatives. We don't ask that he always stay here again. But please, tell me, will he come back one time even? Tarhi drakshamatad vaktram sunasham su samekshana. We want to see him one time. Drakshama, we want to one time glance upon him. Vaktram, his beautiful face, sunasam. And when he thinks about Krishna's beautiful face, he thinks about Krishna's beautiful nose, susamekshana, his eyes and his smile. Mridu smritam madugandhi, the phrase Krishna's smile, again like the fragrance of honey. Very subtle in his lotus eyes. Will we ever see Krishna's face again? At some point, will we see that? And then Nanda remembers the beauty of Krishna's face, and he almost faints. Text 20. And then he begins to remember, after remembering Krishna's form, he begins to remember the deeds, how Krishna saved them. We were saved from the forest fire, the wind, and the rain when Krishna lifted up Govardhan Hill. He saved us from Aristasura, the bull demon, from the serpent demon, from all such insurmountable deadly dangers. We were saved by that very great soul, Krishna. Will he now save us from the devastation of being separated from him? Will he appear before us? This is all we want. He began to remember Krishna's pastimes, how so many opposing elements, such as Aristasura, came to Vrindavan. They were death personified. Aristasura came in to Braja and began destroying the houses of Braja. And he began making such loud sounds. And bulls, in the form of a bull, he was terrifying and huge, huge. And he was destroying the peace of the residents of Vrindavan to such a degree that the cows who were pregnant began to have miscarriages. And the ladies who were carrying children had miscarriages. And Krishna, everyone was just thinking, Krishna, Krishna, save us. save us, because Krishna was the infallible shelter of everyone. And in every situation, they only turned to Krishna. So all the residents of Vrindavan turned to Krishna again. Krishna, Krishna, save us. And Krishna, and he came into Vrindavan at dusk, just at the time when the sun was going down. And it's such a special time in Vrindavan at dusk. The sun was setting, and Krishna was just thinking that this is the perfect time to have a dance with my beloved gopis. And then suddenly everyone was calling out to Krishna, save us from this Aristasura. Actually, the residents of Vrindavan were afraid to live in the Nandagram area because of this Aristasura. But then, as Aristasura was terrorizing everyone, Krishna appeared with his friends and just stood in front of him. And Nanda Maharaj is remembering again and again how Krishna protected them. He swallowed the forest fire, or it came to a drop of cooling nectar and Krishna drank it, or he blew it out. But it was Krishna who protected the residents of Vrindavan in every circumstance. He had protected Nanda Maharaj from the Vidyadhara, the serpent who was swallowing him just with the touch of his lotus feet. When the cowherd men had called out, Krishna, Krishna, save us, save us, save Nanda Maharaj. Your father is in such difficulty. When Aristasura, when Krishna stood before Aristasura, he stood there so fearlessly and so calmly, practically, but angrily. He said, "You rascal, you are the lowest of the low." He was making the point that although you are in the form of a bull, you're a demon. And when I kill you, I should not be accused of killing the personification of Dharma, of religion, a bull. You are the lowest of the low. If you've come here to fight with me, to challenge me, then do so. I'm here. You low creature, why are you terrorizing the residents of Vrindavan? And then Krishna stood in front of him, and with Subal on his side, he just took his hand and put it on the shoulder of Subal and just stood there right in front of him, this demon. Now, who is the coolest of all teenagers? And dressed always in the most perfect way. Perfect with some flamboyance, like Natabara, like the best of dancers, the number one dancer, and moving gracefully in his hand, which was like a serpent, just delicately and gracefully rested on the shoulder of Subal. Come on, you want to fight? Okay. And of course, the bull demon came, the demon in the form of a bull came, and Krishna threw him, and he came again, and then killed him. And Nanda Maharaj is remembering all this. And he's remembering, and he calls Krishna in this verse, Krishnena su mahatmana. That means, he's saying, when will that very great soul, we were saved from the forest fire, the wind and the rain, every time. It is Krishna who comes and saves us when we call for him. And they relentlessly are calling for Krishna, especially now. He saves us. He saved us from the bull demon, the serpent demons, plural, also Agasura. What an amazing pastime that was. When the cowherd boys thought that this demon, that the Vrindavan forest was just presenting them under the instructions of Vrindadevi, because the Vrindavan forest, its pleasure was to give pleasure to Krishna. It was providing the backdrop for all of Krishna's pastimes. And they saw this huge Agajara snake, this python, huge. And they thought, look what the Vrindavan forest has presented us now for our pleasures with Krishna. And then some of them said, no, this is a snake. And his mouth is open just to swallow us. And the boys had a desire, because they had a desire to be saved by Krishna. Because when your hero picks you up from a difficult situation and protects you and saves you from nearby death, what happens to the ecstasy in your love, the loving ecstasy that you are experiencing in your heart? It just explodes again. And this is the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That is, it's an ocean. Relationship with Krishna is an ocean of ever-changing, ever-shifting. Shantaras is not considered a rasa because that ocean is all flat. So most of us prefer the flat ocean in our life and long for a little peace now and then to occasionally occur in our lives. Something a little bit placid. But bhakti, Shantaras is not considered actually a rasa by the Gaudiya Vaishnava charges, because rasa means that there's a churning, there's a movement, there's a tension. And one wave of ecstasy, like Jagtwini Matuji is describing this Kali Kanchan, it is like a bouquet of different emotions in this Dana Kali pastime. There's anger, there's, what are the other emotions? Anger. How many are there? Seven different emotions, and they are like waves banging against each other and creating other configurations of different waves, and big ones come up, and they come down for a while, and then a huge one comes up. So the boys wanted the ecstasy of being in the hands of Krishna and being saved, and that feeling of full-hearted gratitude to Krishna. Like when Krishna's tears, after the Kaliya pastime, when Krishna's tears of affection for the boys brought them back to life after they had died from drinking the poison. They wanted, and they thought, Krishna has brought us back to life. It is Krishna again who has saved me. So they said, anyway, it's a cave, it's a python. We have Krishna. So the boys entered the mouth of the snake. The cows entered, the calves at that time, entered the mouth of the snake. And Krishna, of course, did he want them to enter into the mouth of the snake? Of course not. It would mean harm for them. He couldn't be thinking, well, they can enter and we'll enjoy some rasa, because he's in the mood of their dearest friend. He doesn't want them to experience any pain. So his desire was that they don't enter. Their desire was that they do enter, so they could enjoy and experience the ecstasy of their loving relationship with Krishna, being saved in the overflowing heart of the great hero of Vrindavan again coming to their rescue. And Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes that in this pastime, the boys' desire was one thing and Krishna's desire was just the opposite. And Yogamaya took the side of the boys. And therefore, Krishna thought, how amazing my Maya works. It has foiled my own desire. So what rules Braja? It is not Krishna. Who has the final word of what goes on in Vrindavan? It is not Krishna, and it is not Yogamaya even. It is the prema of these incredible persons who love Krishna with everything. They don't hold back anything, and plus in a special mood, and it's full and it's complete. That's what we read, and this has captured Krishna. Those were the verses we read yesterday. It has captured Krishna. They don't have anything but Krishna. They're focused on him, and it's for all for Krishna. And then Krishna entered that snake, and there, because he was performing Naralila always, which means he can't perform his activities in such a way, even when killing demons, he can't perform his activities in such a way that the prema of the Brijbasis becomes disturbed. So if he manifests 1,000 arms or 20,000 arms or manifests huge strength, except when he's lifting Giriraj, then that will disturb them thinking he's our village boy. But in the mouth of the Agasura, no one could see him. So therefore he expanded himself bigger and bigger until he choked this demon, so he didn't disturb the mood of Braja Prema. So Nanda Maharaj is starting to become enwrapped by talking about Uddhav to Uddhav, and his heart is beginning to open, and the love that he feels with Krishna in separation is bringing him to remember his pastimes with Krishna, and or Krishna's pastimes, and he's experiencing Krishna in this remembrance of Krishna and his pastimes. So then in 21, he says, Nanda Maharaj says, Smarantam Krishna Viryani. We are remembering the Krishna Viryani, the various valorous virya, full with power, deeds of Krishna. Lila Panga Narikshitam. And how, so remembering these powerful deeds of Krishna, but also this captivating way that he glances at everyone in a very intimate way, just between you and me, way out of the corner of his eyes. I once had an experience like that with Srila Prabhupada, where I had given Prabhupada in Hong Kong, I had given Prabhupada a ring that said on it, Jai ISKCON, because there was some problem going on in ISKCON at that time. And in a bit of naivety, and I was very innocent long ago. There was some innocence in my heart. It sounds very childish, but it was innocent. I gave Prabhupada this ring trying to encourage him. Anyway, it was gold. It was solid gold, 24-karat gold. So then I had the fortune of going on an aeroplane with Srila Prabhupada, and I sat next to him for some of the journey. I know there were so many memorable things happened, and then the next day or 2 days later, while we were in Japan, Srila Prabhupada, Sudama Prabhu, was giving Prabhupada a massage. And Prabhupada was just sitting in his gumption, he was massaging him, and I was sitting there too. So it was just the three of us in one room. So So Prabhupada was getting massaged, and he was massaging Prabhupada's hands, and then he saw that Prabhupada was wearing a new ring, a golden ring. So he said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, you have a new ring." I said, "Yes." And then he said, "Who gave it to you?" And there was just the three of us there, and he was massaging Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada just looked up and sort of just glanced at me, and he said, "Oh, someone." And in that, by the subtlety of it, because if he would have said, "Oh, Brijan has given it to me," or something, then I would have, you know, I would have gotten embarrassed and this and that. But it was the subtlety. The subtlety made it just between him, he and I, so intimate. So Krishna was doing that continuously in Vrindavan. And Nanda Maharaj, even with Nanda Maharaj, after Krishna was, he had stolen so much butter, and he was so naughty. And all the ladies from the nearby houses came in, and they were criticizing Krishna because they were talking Krishna katha basically, and they were engaging in this rasa with Krishna, and Krishna was sitting there looking quite frightened because Krishna wasn't afraid of anyone, but he was afraid of Mother Yashoda. So he was just sitting there, you know, trying to look as much as an angel as he could, you know, me. And there's this charming exchange that's happening with Mother Yashoda and these ladies who are criticizing Krishna, and she's completely defending Krishna. And Krishna's just sitting there, you know, me, I'm not doing anything. And then they say, "Well, you'll know what it's like when he does this to you." And the next pastime is the Damodar pastime, where he steals from Mother Yashoda, and she has to beg from them rope so she could tie him up. And they say, "Oh, Mother Yashoda, your boy has been stealing. Really, he's been stealing. Oh." Because everything has a little bit of... So after that, Nanda Maharaj... And she says, "You're just envious of you have something against my boy. For some reason, you have something against him, but he doesn't do anything wrong." And then they leave. But when Nanda Maharaj comes, he says, "How was the day?" And Krishna's there. And she starts saying, Mother Yashoda starts saying, that everyone is complaining that Krishna is stealing, that he's done this and he's done that, and, you know, he's stolen. And Krishna just goes over to Nanda Maharaj and sits on his lap and just hugs him and just puts his arms around his neck and just hugs him. And Nanda Maharaj wants to enjoy. So he says, "My Krishna would never do anything like that." And Krishna hugs him a little tighter. And Yashoda's saying this and that. And he said, "Krishna, since she's so critical of you all the time, from now on, you never have to sit on her lap again. You just sit on my lap." And then as soon as Krishna hears that, he releases Nanda Maharaj and runs to Mother Yashoda and gives her the biggest hug. So the dealings, and then he's gone. And then he's not there at all. And all they're left with is these memories that are alive completely in their hearts. His glances, all these different activities and their deeds. And in that remembrance, Krishna is with them. But they're not thinking, "Oh, nice, how wonderful it is. We love this mood of separation because then we can remember Krishna and he is with us in this way." It's the exact opposite of how they're thinking. They're thinking the worst thing, that separation is worse than death. Because this is the nature of love. And the nature of that love is that Krishna becomes present. He's alive in that. Because Krishna and his name, Krishna and his pastimes, Krishna and his form, they are all Krishna. But one has to enter them with relationship, with love. So we were so sumap, so by that great soul. So at the end of this text 20, he says, "Diratyebhyo mrityobhya Krishna." He's saved us from all these terrible circumstances. Why doesn't he save us now? And there is only one thing that can save us now, and that one thing is that he comes before us at least once so we can look at his face. And he ends this verse by Krishnena Su Mahatmana. We have been saved by that very great soul, Su Mahatmana. Krishnena Su Mahatmana. By that great soul, Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, he comments on this word, Su Mahatmana, by saying, that it means he is the most excellent great soul, having the natural qualities such as unconditional love, that he loves us without any condition. Nanda Maharaj is putting this meaning in the word Mahatmana. He loves us without any condition, then therefore he must come to us. Unconditional love. Second quality of the Sumamana is mercifulness. He should be merciful to us and save our lives. Because, as will come out later, he says, how long can, Uddhava understands, how long can they go on like this? One day, 2 days, Uddhava will say, don't worry, he's coming soon. Soon, the word soon appears to them like death. Soon, one day, 2 days, 9 days, how much longer can we go on? So he is merciful. He loves. We don't have any love for him. Vasudev has the love for him. Otherwise, because look, Vasudev is with him. He's the one who loves him. It is well known that Krishna stays with those he loves and he is not with us. It is our fault. They never find fault with Krishna, except the gopis. That's something a little different. And not only does he have the quality of mercifulness, he should be mercifulness, but he also has the quality of, in Sumahatman, of power. So he actually has the power to come. He can do anything, everything. Where is our Krishna? Okay, we'll end here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Bolo Giriraj Dharan ki jai, Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Jai Jai Sri Radhe. Wait, stop. I promise you that we can take prasadam soon and you can take rest. But just for this last one last little part, please put some prayer and depth that when will some love for Krishna enter my heart? Put that into the calling out the names of Giriraj, who is the best of all servants, who can give everything, and put that into your calling out the names of Radhesham. So let us try again. Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki jai! Bolo Giriraj Dharan ki jai! Bolo Giriraj Baba ki jai! Jai Jai Sri Radhe! Jai Jai Sri Radhe.
Krishna.